Hello and welcome back to another episode of Bioactive Live Q&A. This is episode 37 with Timothy Hammond. I'm your host, Mark Ashworth from MI Beneficials. With me, as always, I've got Brian from Rubber Ducky Isopods, Kevin from OK Calyx, and as I stated before, I've got Tim Hammond on the line here to talk about quantum biology, holistic health, and how it ties to regenerative agriculture, which is kind of the thesis of the show. We like to tie back to soil and agriculture. We also love talking about bioactive enclosures and stuff like that on the inside. But today we're going to be talking more about our personal health, why growing locally, why growing your own garden regeneratively, eating locally, and having a seasonal diet is so important on a quantum level. And, you know, with no further ado, I want to introduce Tim Hammond from Regenerant, who's here, a speaker from Camp Compost, who really connected out there, came highly recommended from Quatamac via Alexa, from Organic Alexa. And a lot of my friends from previous years talked about your presentation and how moving it was and how connected they were, because a lot of those people are in regenerative agriculture as well. So this is going to be a fun talk. Tim, your story is unique. It kind of started with a Lyme diagnosis, right? Lyme disease. Which is what got you thinking totally differently about your medicine, your regimen. And from what I understand is you really tried the Western medicine, the modern medicine road with a lot of mixed diagnoses, with a lot of mixed signals and crossing roads and chasing tails and added costs. And so can you take us through the story of where it started and how you got to where you are today in quantum biology and health?
And why you got light on your face?
I got a red light. Yeah. Well, the red light we can get to in a bit, but essentially artificial blue light at night is very circadian disrupting. So I'm protecting my melatonin stores for my body to be able to regenerate at night, essentially. But we can get more into the weeds about that later if we want.
There you go, Brian.
My journey, my previous career was that I was an intelligence analyst and political disinformation investigator, military contractor, essentially. And throughout the years, I was experiencing these waves of health crashes. And I would always, just based on the adrenaline of the environment I was in, have to climb out and ride the top of the wave again. But eventually, these crashes just came more and more frequently, and it became harder and harder to climb out. And I ended up just basically spending all of my life's energy, what felt like treading water and waiting for the next inevitable crash where the medical system could never really help me, and often just gaslit me constantly, which I know probably resonates with a lot of people who experience any kind of chronic illness. I basically came to the conclusion on my own after so many years that I likely had Lyme disease. So I went and got tested and was somewhat lucky, quote unquote, that I had a very clear diagnosis, because the Lyme disease tests are so inaccurate and poor. It was helpful in a sense that I had a very clear raging case, the doctor said. So I knew what I was dealing with. And that was an alleviation, because it felt somewhat validating to have a diagnosis, because with Lyme, I also had numerous co-infections that made the severity of the disease and the treatment much more complicated, like Babesia, which is a blood parasite that's a cousin to malaria. That's quite commonly spreading these days as well. So that really started off about a decade of, as you said in the beginning introduction, trying pretty much every treatment modality I could. So I went the pharmaceutical route and had to take pulsed antibiotics, about 50 pills a day at one point, for 8 months straight. And it just seemed like it was killing me. And it seemed somewhat antithetical to my own ability to boost up my immune system if I'm just doing this nuclear option of bombing the entire microbiome in my body that's responsible for my immune capabilities. So It wasn't quite resonating. I was becoming disabled and unable to work and keep my job because the symptoms were just getting so much worse with treatment, which is common. It's called a Herxheimer's reaction when you treat Lyme. It's releasing all these endotoxins that cause extreme aggravation of any pre-existing symptoms. So I tried to pivot. I couldn't keep doing that treatment modality, and I pivoted to more naturopathic remedies because maybe that was the way to go. But they were really doing the same thing in terms of, let's just throw things at the body. And instead of throwing pharmaceutical medications, they were throwing supplements and herbs and not really looking at, well, yes, I have these infections, but what is the root cause reason why my body is susceptible to this? Why my immune system's not able to handle it effectively on its own? And what are the environmental conditions that are kind of setting the stage for this disease? So none of these models, whether it was the traditional allopathic or the more naturopathic, were kind of looking, they were really following the same ideology. And so eventually, this ties to the regenerative agriculture of it all. During the pandemic years, dealing with the disease, I developed a passion for regenerative agriculture and just started studying it and took Kiss the Ground organization has a soil advocate training program online. I took that, studying about it, and I just started practicing what I was learning out in my own little garden. And it took about 3 years of cycling through summers and winters where I noticed, well, every summer when I'm outside, I'm barefoot, I'm grounded, I'm under the UV light of the sun, my symptoms would alleviate greatly. But then every winter, when I'm more indoors, I'm ungrounded, I'm working behind the computer, a blue lit environment, high non-native EMF, my symptoms would become quite debilitating again. And so it made sense to me that, well, nature's healing, right? We all know this, nature's healing, but I really needed to know why. And that sent me down the path of studying quantum biology, which quantum biology looks at life on a quantum level, quantum meaning the smallest unit of something. So that's looking at life through the lens of subatomic particles. How do photons interact with electrons, and how does that relate to our health? Whereas these other models that I tried with the pharmaceutical route and the naturopathic route, all that conventional medical approach, it's not that it's wrong, but it's focusing on a biochemical level, which looks at life at the level of molecular interactions. So by kind of taking a first principles approach of breaking things down, first principles is a great way of analyzing any complex problem, right? Because you break it down into its most essential components. Well, I had to do that to solve my own health problem, so I broke it down. And that meant going down to biophysics, not just relying on biochemistry. So that's kind of the path that took me to this new realm. And it worked. Once I started applying everything I learned about circadian and quantum biology into my own life, I experienced actual sustained improvements. I'm no longer having to take any kind of medications or even supplements, and I'm getting better and better. I feel great.
And that literally started for you with just controlling your light intake, like being aware of the harmful NNEMF and the blue light and all that, and not letting it interrupt, not letting that constantly interrupt your natural circadian rhythm. Is that kind of essentially what you're saying? Like that's how it began for you?
I'd say that the light piece, so quantum biology, we kind of have three main pillars we focus on, which is light, water, and magnetism. And the easiest way to get started is with the light. And like you're saying, fixing your circadian rhythms. So getting up every morning and seeing sunrise, because the very specific frequencies of light that are available at sunrise set the body's master clock in the brain, which is a cluster of nerves in the hypothalamus called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It acts basically as the conductor of the orchestra that's sending light signals that your eyes are receiving and distributing them to all the cells in your body so that they know where the sun is in the sky so that they can all work cohesively together. So they need this timing information. And because we evolved on a planet with regular cycles of day and night, we have circadian biology. All of our cells have clock genes in them, because they need to know what time of day it is or night in order to turn on or off and regulate gene expression. So for example, in the morning, there's an increasing rise of blue light in the environment. And so that blue light activates melanopsin receptors in our retina that stimulate pituitary gland activity to release cortisol, stress hormones, increase blood sugar to get us up and going for the day. And then at night, after the sun has set, that diminished blue light is a signal to switch off pituitary gland activity and switch on pineal gland activity, which turns off that cortisol and turns up your melatonin. And we think of melatonin as the sleep hormone, but it's also a critical antioxidant, which runs two programs in the body while you sleep. One is autophagy, which is recycling of damaged cell components. And the other is apoptosis, which is basically programmed cell suicide. So if you have a cancerous cell, for example, you need that melatonin at night while you're sleeping in order to clean up and allow space for new healthy cell growth. So even if you're going to bed and you feel like you're sleeping well, let's say you're exposing your eyes to a phone screen that's highly blue lit, that is sending signals to your brain that, whoops, it's actually noon. It's the middle of the day. So we need to suppress melatonin and we need to ramp up cortisol and blood sugar levels. So your body only is able to tell time based on light. So that's pretty critical. So even if I slept in that condition and felt like I was sleeping fine, I've inhibited my body's ability to actually heal while I'm sleeping because I've disrupted the melatonin release. So a good way to start this healing journey is with the circadian biology.
And that's an easy one for people, that right? It doesn't require you necessarily, and I was going to ask this too, but it doesn't necessarily require you to buy anything, right? Because, you know, like, I feel like one of the ways to help with seasonal affect disorder is with those vitamin D lights. Because of the lack of sunlight, and that's the whole reason why there's a market for those things. And, you know, is there any backing with your understanding? Like, is there any help coming from an artificial light like that in your natural circadian rhythm?
I generally advise against it. So we tend to think that, well, in the winter, especially in northern environments, there is no more UVB, and we require UVB contact directly on the skin in order to synthesize vitamin D. And we know how critical vitamin D is for our immune health. But nature has a reason and a rhyme for everything. And I really truly believe that as long as you're living within the rules of the natural environment in which you live, it's going to provide you with what you need. So how would we survive if we can't synthesize vitamin D all winter long? Well, we now know that melatonin, which would be increased in the winter because of the increased amounts of darkness, is able to dock to the vitamin D receptor and stimulate a lot of the same activity. So you can benefit from winter and its increased amount of darkness because that melatonin will kind of take a role that a lot of vitamin D will play. And also, if you think about winter time, if you're eating seasonally, you're eventually going to have to go into a more ketogenic diet, which is going to train your body to be able to metabolize fats and proteins because that's what's locally available. There's not enough UV light to be able to grow carbohydrates, right? So if you do that, when you're burning these fat cells, it will start releasing the stored vitamin D that you're able to gather all summer. So by living kind of seasonally and embracing more darkness, not staying up maybe as late as you would in the summer, you know, blocking the artificial blue light at night to take advantage of the increased melatonin that you would need in the winter for that healing and for that vitamin D receptor binding, and you phase into that more ketogenic diet for that season, you're able to boost the amount of vitamin D essentially that you would need naturally. And some of these lights, there may be specific cases where they're very therapeutic and helpful, so I don't want to poo-poo them entirely, but
sorry for putting you on the spot. It's a
chaotic light signature.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that one. It was kind of like a fleeting thought that I let bleed into my brain there and come out. So but it's amazing the damage that technology has really had on our natural ability to go through these long winters, especially, you know, you live in Michigan, you live even further north than I do. You're 3.5 hours north of me in Michigan. So it's colder. It's probably a little even darker. We're on the same exact latitude. So or I'm sorry, longitude. So it's, so we have the same amount of lack of sun, I should say. So knowing that really what it takes is maybe limiting your screen time at night. Would you say it's actually like eliminating screen time, or is it implementing things like what you're doing in the Red Room right now? And somebody asked about it, who came on a little later, about the Red Room or, and why you look like you're in the depths of hell right now. but like, is it something that you would say, like, obviously you're on the show right now. It's 9:15 here in Michigan. You know, would you recommend people eliminate at night completely? What time would it be? Or is it okay? Because it's a kind of a necessity of life, if we want to be honest. I mean, we're all running online businesses. So can you get away with using these blue light blockers and stuff like that?
Yeah, I love the question because it's getting to the practical realities, right? We live in a modern society. We can't completely hide away. And this ties to your previous question that really hints at the benefit of quantum biology and applying its lessons to our daily lives, in that most of the applications of this information is entirely free. This is decentralized healthcare. And I think that that's why this resonates so much with the regenerative agriculture community, is because with regenerative agriculture, we are decentralizing the food system. And we know, just looking at nature's designs, that decentralized systems are the most resilient regenerative, and that's what we should be really modeling. And so quantum biology, hand in hand with regenerative agriculture, is really doing that for health and healthcare, which is exciting, right? You don't need to go through any central intermediary or pay some expert to go outside and see the sun and get grounded on the earth, right? And that connects to what you're saying now about the blue blockers and things. So most of the applications are free, right? But there are certain tools and resources that are available to us that can make living easier. So yes, it's best to block all sources of artificial blue light after sunset when it's naturally no longer available. However, I don't want to miss out on an interview or something like this, still need to work. So that's where I'm wearing some dark lensed blue blocking glasses. And these are very, very helpful for mitigating the amount of blue that's entering my eyes. And that's why I've also switched to these red hellish lights that I have on here, because there is zero blue in these, so that will be much less circadian disrupting than the blue. Because remember, the blue light, that specific wavelength of electromagnetic energy, and light is electromagnetic energy, that is how your body really tells time. That's really the circadian timekeeping mechanism, is the amount of increasing or decreasing blue. So red is much less circadian disrupting.
Yeah, and I don't know about you guys, but I'd be lying if I said that I didn't know exactly what you're talking about as far as looking at a screen at night and then all of a sudden feeling re-energized and not ready to sleep now all of a sudden, whether it be laying in the bed or whether it be sitting on this show. Honestly, like, the show has been going longer and longer because the guests have been getting amazing. And please don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to hit the like button. Don't forget to follow at Regenerant and the boys here on the show. That's how this show stays alive and gets supported. And to my point is, after the show ends at 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I'm amped. I have a light here in my face. I got the screen here in my face. So if you guys see me going full Elton John here soon with the blue light blockers, you'll know why, because Friday night is not the night that he was talking about. He was talking about Saturday night. So Friday night, I got to get sleep. Saturday night is the night for fighting. So anyways, I think that's great information, because it is a necessity, especially this day and age. We're trying to connect across time zones on shows like this. A lot of guys are coming on from Oregon, you know, where it's earlier there, maybe not as detrimental. So knowing that there are options to deal with the reality of this technology driven world, it's tough, because like we talk about it a lot, there are opportunities out there, especially when it comes to the internet these days. And with that kind of venue comes a lot of screen time that you wouldn't normally have. And it's work. So it's like hard to say no to it. So to have that option is great. Now, we talked about a lot about light. Let's shift into the next kind of pillar. There's the three pillars kind of what quantum biology is. What is the next one?
So the next would typically be water. And the main lesson on that, water can be a little bit, get more complicated, actually. The main lesson on that is that the water inside your body, the majority of the water inside your body, is not in the liquid state that you drink. So when those water molecules touch a hydrophilic or water-loving surface, which would be any tissue or membrane or cell in the body, the water molecules, which are typically just H2O molecules that in a liquid state are always connecting and reconnecting with other different molecules in a very disorganized, disordered fashion. And that's what gives water its liquid property. But when they surround a cell, for example, or are inside a cell, they will spontaneously rearrange themselves into an ordered hexagonal lattice structure, similar to like a liquid crystal. Or this is similar to how ice forms, right? This molecular structure of ice becomes an ordered crystal lattice. And this is very similar to that. However, it's somewhere in between a solid and a liquid, and it's a gel-like state. Now, this is called exclusion zone water. And a lot of the discoveries on exclusion zone water properties have come from Professor Gerald Pollack. So he's written a book called The Fourth Phase of Water, if anybody wants to read more about this. But what's really fascinating about this water is that as it's forming into this tightly woven molecular structure, not every hydrogen atom that's part of the H2O molecules is able to fit within the structure, and they end up getting kicked out. So this is called exclusion zone water because it's excluding anything that's larger than a proton or an electron from entering it. So what this ends up doing is that the oxygen is remaining, right? And oxygen is negatively charged. So this exclusion zone water, this gel-like water that is lining your cells, becomes negatively charged. And the remaining bulk water or liquid water where these protons are getting kicked out into become positively charged. So essentially, the creation of exclusion zone water inside your body creates charge separation. And what do we know about charge separation? That sounds like a battery. And so now there's plenty of evidence that suggests that most of the energy that fuels life at the cell and below cell level is coming from exclusion zone water and the charge separation of water. Because as we know, two like charges, a proton next to a proton, will repel each other, right? So by kind of funneling this, that's a big contributor to how blood flows through narrow capillaries in the body, lymph, things of that nature. The electrostatic propulsion is driven by this charge separation, and that's how things are getting powered in the body. And critically, the water you drink isn't necessarily as important as the water you make. And what I mean by that is inside of our cells, we have hundreds to thousands of these little organelles that are symbiotic organisms called mitochondria. I'm sure a lot of us have heard about mitochondria. They're typically considered the powerhouse of the cell. Well, most of the focus so far under typical biochemical models has been that mitochondria produce cellular energy in the form of ATP. And we know that they create water as well. But that water in our textbooks that we grew up reading in middle and high school biology classes was considered just a byproduct. Oh, it doesn't matter, liquid water, not relevant to the body, has no involvement in our biology, it's just a byproduct. We now know through the science and discoveries of exclusion zone water properties that that's a main feature, right? And ATP, our bodies don't actually create enough of it for all of the energy to be able to fuel the body. So it acts just as a way of creating scaffolding for exclusion zone water to form. So essentially, if I can sum it up, if you support the health of your mitochondria through things like infrared light from the sun, through things like grounding and electron absorption from the earth, that's what they need in order to funnel electrons through them to create ATP and water. So the more hydrated you are intracellularly, the more energy your cells will have. So the slower you will age and the less disease you have, because if you start getting dehydrated mitochondria and cells, that's where disease starts kicking in. Does that make kind of sense? The water can be hard to explain.
This is fantastic. That was
amazing, dude. That was amazing.
Fantastic information, Tim.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So how do we, I mean, you said grounding yourself. You said the getting natural light. I think, again, maybe it wasn't natural light. It seemed like it was almost alluding to natural light again. But how else do we improve our mitochondrial ability to, or mitochondrial hydration, or ability to hydrate?
Yeah, ability to create water.
The ability to create water. How do we optimize that for ourselves beyond the two you just listed there?
Mm-hmm. So I'll just explain that the way that our mitochondria create energy, they have something called an electron transport chain. And so they funnel electrons, which are these negatively charged subatomic particles, through five protein complexes that make up this electron transport chain. Well, as they're doing this, electrons are being funneled through. It's causing protons to be pumped up into the intermembrane space from the matrix of the mitochondria. So it's creating a charge gradient. It's creating a buildup of positive charge on one end and essentially a buildup of negative charge due to a lack of positive charge on the other. So again, our mitochondria are acting as batteries because they're creating charge separation. Now, eventually, this proton gradient builds up to such a concentration that protons get funneled back down into the matrix, and they're funneled down to a specific protein complex called the ATPase, and it's the fifth protein in this complex, and it's literally shaped like a little nanomotor, and it can only fit these protons through it, these hydrogen atoms, and as they get pumped through back due to this charge separation, that's what is provides the energy for ATP to be synthesized. So that's how they're creating energy. And at the protein complex before that, the fourth one, that's where we're creating the water. So essentially, we know that we need electrons to do this. The body is electrical in nature. And if you want to learn more about this aspect, I would look at the work of Dr. Robert Obecker, because he was really a scientific pioneer in understanding the bioelectrical properties of the body. So one of the most effective ways that we talked about is grounding. So anytime two conductive surfaces touch, electrons will flow from the area of greatest concentration to the area of lesser concentration. And the Earth's surface is an infinite repository of electrons because it's always being replenished by solar radiation and lightning strikes. That means when we touch the Earth with our hands, we're out there gardening, or we're walking around barefoot, or we're on the beach, we are absorbing electrons, and those electrons are getting stored in the exclusion zone water. The exclusion zone water acts as a repository of electrons, which is very critical because we need those electrons to be funneled through the mitochondria to produce our water, to produce our energy. Now, what makes this fourth protein complex work more efficiently is actually infrared light. So infrared is the invisible long wavelengths of light, of which the sun is about 50%. It's this infrared range that we cannot see. We experience it as heat, but it is light that is able to its long wavelengths, penetrate deep into the body and stimulate the mitochondria to produce more of this water. So the infrared light and the grounding are really critical. But on the other hand, so are avoiding mitochondrial toxins, which are everywhere. And this leads to glyphosate. Glyphosate is a huge mitochondrial toxin. In the regenerative agriculture space, we typically talk about the fact of how it acts like an antibiotic and things of this nature, destroying the soil microbiome and destroying our own gut lining, making it hypopermeable and causing all these food allergies and autoimmune conditions. But glyphosate is also a toxin to our mitochondria because those mitochondria started out as their own independent bacteria life forms. So because it's basically an antibiotic, it is destroying them. A second thing to watch out for would be fluoride. So making sure that the water that you're drinking, especially if it's municipal water, that you are doing what you can to filter that out from fluoride and drink a good quality water if you can.
Where do glyphosates come from? Like what?
So it's sold as typically Roundup. It's a weed killer. It's an herbicide. And this is sprayed all over, used in industrial agriculture. But actually, most people's toxic exposure isn't coming from industrial agriculture. Where all of our crops, big reason they're having to be genetically modified is because they have to be able to survive all of the glyphosate, which is killing all of the weeds. Right. But so it's pretty terrible. They're hand in hand. But then
so it's all over our food. It's all over the food, basically. Yeah.
And it's water soluble. So it's not just in the food. It's getting run off from people's lawns. People are using it at their homes because they don't know. So they're buying weed killer and spraying it all over their property. Your neighbor is poisoning you. So it's also coming down from the rain. It's in our water tables. Glyphosate is everywhere. So it's a huge disaster.
And that ties right
back. And a really great reference for this is Dr. Stephanie Seneff, too. She's an expert in glyphosate.
And it ties right kind of back into the urgency and the necessity to grow your own food with that's not being under the hand of these giant corporations growing these genetically modified organisms that are just capable of taking nuclear war storms of glyphosates and the things that are hurting you on a quantum level. This, you know, I truly.
Oh, when he does that, he accidentally hit his mic or whatever there. So, Mark.
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah. I touched my mic cord and it failed on me. But I hope that people come. I hope that there are people that are fringe gardeners out there that are thinking, hey, maybe that just grow cannabis right now and are you know, putting emphasis on that aspect of their health because that might be a medicinally necessity for them. I hope that people can look at that fact that we just heard, you know, because that's hurting us on a really deep level. But there's two things that you can do with what he just said, as far as grounding, as far as avoiding glyphosates, and that's getting in the garden and getting involved in your backyard, getting more involved in your diet. I hope that people take that as motivation from this because that sounds like it can really help. And it motivates me to want to be a better gardener, to provide more food for my family out of the backyard. Because that scares the hell out of me, truly. Now, shifting a little bit, the NNEMF frequency, does that also affect mitochondrial health? Like EMF waves and like stuff coming off of technology and your cell phone and all this stuff? And like, is that something that also affects mitochondrial health?
Yes, unfortunately, the evidence suggests that it does quite severely. Now, typically, the conventional response to this would be that no, non-native electromagnetic frequencies do not have any biological impact on you because these are forms of non-ionizing radiation, which essentially just means that these are low, long wavelength forms of electromagnetic energy that don't carry enough energy to be able to heat up your tissues and cause cellular destruction of DNA. But just because they're non-ionizing, they are still outside the natural native electromagnetic spectrum under which our species evolved and to which we are adapted. And we've suddenly changed the electromagnetic environment of our planet so dramatically in the last 100 years or less than that, that we can't expect that we've made environmental changes. Our bodies are not adapted and did not evolve with these inputs. So, of course, there's going to be some biological consequence. But specifically, some of the things we found that non-native EMFs do is you have things called voltage-gated calcium ion channels on your cells that have electrical impulses that allow them to open and close to allow calcium into the cell at a controlled rate. Non-native EMF have been shown to basically keep that gated channel stuck open. So this causes calcium efflux, and an excess amount of calcium will flood into the cell, which calcium is positively charged, so that will make the cell become more acidic. And the inside of the cell needs to be negatively charged, which correlates with a higher pH or alkalinity. So positive charge, correlates with acidity and inflammation. Negative charge correlates with alkalinity and reduced inflammation. So because of this, our mitochondria have to stop what they're doing by, they have to stop their primary function of producing ATP and metabolic water. And instead, they have to focus on sequestering calcium. They have this secondary role of sequestering excess calcium. So what does that mean? That means that when we're exposed to wireless devices, so non-native EMF just means Wi-Fi, cell service, Bluetooth devices, all of our wireless technology, they inhibit your mitochondria from doing their jobs, which means you become cellularly dehydrated because they're not producing that water, which means you're going to age faster and disease is going to progress more, and you're producing less cellular energy. A second thing that non-native EMFs have been shown to do is they will literally collapse that exclusion zone water, which, as we described earlier, due to its charge separation capabilities, is a battery that fuels your cells and promotes flow throughout the body. It collapses the exclusion zone by 15 to 20%. So it's literally reducing your battery, your energetic capabilities, which means your ability to detox, your ability to have proper circulation and many effects. So unfortunately, the most non-native EMFs tend to be the last and third pillar that we get to in quantum biology because it's unfortunately the most inconvenient. Nobody wants to hear this. I used to love wearing my AirPods. I had wireless keyboard, wireless mouse. I loved all of it. But I have now made a concerted effort to switch back to wired devices, you know, plug back into an Ethernet cable, turn off the Wi-Fi at night, because just because this is non-ionizing radiation, it doesn't mean it doesn't have other biological effects, specifically on the mitochondria.
Well, and I don't think, I mean, would you probably wouldn't be doing these things too if it didn't actually have a significant impact on you, your health and your life at this point.
Sure.
So,
and that was the last thing for me to be able to incorporate because I felt like I was doing everything right. I was really integrating everything I was learning throughout these years. However, it took a long time to understand and accept the idea that it was the non-native EMF that was triggering my Lyme symptoms more than anything else. And by removing the non-native EMF has been the most significant factor. I mean, the circadian rhythm, the light environment, the promoting mitochondrial health is all critical. But if I'm doing all of that and I'm in a really high non-native EMF environment, I'm really working against the grain, making things a lot harder for myself. I would not have believed it if I did not personally experience it. I'll just say that.
And, you know, what you're talking about is obviously fringe because it's not information that's read. It's fringe because it's not readily available information. It's also not easily digestible information, which is why it is a special opportunity to have somebody like you on here and somebody like us who really, I mean, like to me, the information that you have is profound because it's new and it also can help me with the things that I struggle with. Seasonal affect disorder, absolutely. Gut health, absolutely. Probably just like 90% of everybody on here. So being able to do some practical things and to think about these things and actually understand why, you know, the phone in your face at night, why the phone in your pocket constantly, why having a plethora of, you know, EMF going on in your house, why actually reducing that stuff can actually improve your health and which probably is going to equate to being in a better mood, being in a better mindset to do better things with your life. So is that, we talked with Quadamok. We can get into some community questions, but Quadamok had brought up Super Sarah powder. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's like a ceramic charged powder. I'm going to butcher this explanation. It's used, people put it in their paint to paint their walls, and I believe it reduces these EMF waves. People put it in their gardening inputs to improve the energy holding capability, I suppose. Is that something that you use? Is that like something that you could explain for us? Because like I got super interested in Super Sara powder and how to incorporate that into my ferments and how that actually does could improve my soil health, equating to better plant health. How does that work?
Sure. I mean, I would definitely defer to Quadamock on this. I think he's got a lot more experience integrating it and experimenting with it for sure. The only information or lens that I really have on this is that I believe that bioceramics are emitting a high amount of infrared. So this is invisible light that we cannot see. But again, infrared is this long range wavelengths of light that deeply penetrate the body, stimulate the mitochondria. We talked about that exclusion zone building around our cells and inside of our cells. Well, what actually grows that exclusion zone, grows that battery inside of us, is infrared exposure. So you're essentially boosting your cellular, your redox potential, we call it. Redox potential is essentially your healing capacity. And it all comes down to how many electrons can you store in your body? Because electrons are not only needed to pump through the mitochondria to create our energy and our water, but they also need to be available in the body for redox reactions. So let's say you have free radicals that are causing inflammation. Well, how do those free radicals cause inflammation? They are molecules that have unpaired electrons. So they go around stealing electrons from other molecules. And that basically creates like a low burning fire throughout the body and a chain reaction of all these free radicals missing electrons and stealing from others. So if we have stores of electrons in this exclusion zone water, it's able to be donated to these free radicals to basically put out the fire in a balanced fashion. So something that is infrared emitting in that sense, to me, it makes sense that maybe it's helping build exclusion zone water. So maybe that's helping the microorganisms as well in a way. I'm not exactly sure. And maybe that's where it's coming into people integrating it with their clothing or paint. I've read a little bit. It's not an area that I know a lot about, but if it is emitting infrared, that makes sense to me of why it might have some of these therapeutic benefits.
Hey, I wanted to get a question in real quick before we get to the audience. So I've actually healed myself. I had leaky gut. I got really into autophagy, trying to understand this stuff on a whole nother level. Seaweed snacks, kefir. I talk about this on the show a lot. So to have you on the show tonight is fantastic. The last thing that I have is that I enjoy playing online poker, so much so that I want to be able to create this as a little extra moneymaker for my family. And one of the things is that all my stuff is now Bluetooth, and I've noticed that my hands, especially at night, it really hurts. Like it almost feels like arthritis. And I've been paying kind of a lot of money, to be honest, a couple hundred bucks a month to do this Graston thing, which does seem like it helps. But when I was talking to the lady, she told me that if I'm doing Graston constantly on my hands for arthritis, then it's still coming from the gut. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
I experienced the exact same thing. So from non-native EMF, it's the Bluetooth radiation. So for example, it's all about developing a conscious use of technology. My phone right now is on airplane mode, right? Because I don't need to use it. But after the call, if I need to check emails or something, I don't need to turn on the Bluetooth and the cell service and the Wi-Fi. These are all three different forms of radiation that are being emitted, right? So I can consciously choose, well, I can keep it in airplane mode because I'm at home. I can connect it to the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi is going to be less radiation than the cell service and the Bluetooth on as well, and then turn it off when I'm done using it. And I find I have the exact same experience to this day where if I'm holding my phone and I have Wi-Fi and the cell service turned on, that cell service will cause my hands to really ache and it feels very arthritic. But if I mitigate that non-native EMF and reduce it as much as I can, then that completely goes away for me. So that's something you could start exploring. I think about it like entering a room, turning on the light to see. And when I leave that room, I turn off that light because I'm no longer using it. Well, non-native EMF is light. Light is part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And we only have photoreceptors in our eyes to be able to see a very narrow sliver of this electromagnetic spectrum. That's the colors of the rainbow. We know the sun also provides invisible UV and the invisible infrared. So that's the spectrum that we're evolved under that drove our evolution. But outside of the spectrum is this non-native EMF, and that's what's causing some of these problems. So I would definitely experiment with that and use it more consciously, right? So if I'm exiting the room and I turn off the light, you can turn off the light, this invisible light, because you're no longer using it. So see how you feel. See if some of that mitigates. There might be other things going on, of course, but this is something quick, easy, and free that you can experiment with to see if you have any resolution of that symptom.
I appreciate that. And I want to let Kevin get in here.
Hey, I have a question. So how, real quick, how close are we to entering the conspiracy theory that these lights in our technology and all of our little screens and things are intentionally put to these light wavelengths that are just simply seem to be detrimental to us, you know? How close are we to that, man? We don't have to go too far.
We can go, yeah. How far into the depths do we want to dive? Well, let's
you did used to be a you used to be a disinformation political disinformation specialist.
I did.
This is
I
a
did.
Good guy to talk on this. I love the question, Kevin.
I love the question too. If you're curious about this, maybe explore some of the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, who's done some really fascinating podcasts and work on this, and he goes down into the depths. What I would say is, let's focus on the parts that we do know for sure. We do know that technology companies specifically use a, let's say, disproportionate amount of blue light to drive addiction. Well, why is this? I talked about blue light in terms of the circadian disruption of it all, right? Well, blue light also drives dopamine. So if we are looking at our devices and we looked at a spectrometer that shows all the different wavelengths of light that are being emitted, our LED lights and our screens and our telephones have this really huge spike in blue light compared to the other wavelengths and a total absence of infrared, which is very damaging because infrared provides a balance to everything and the oxidative stress of the blue. But the blue drives dopamine. So they want you addicted to the tech, right? This is purpose. We know this. We know that Facebook and the way that they design their algorithms and the scrolling, they want our time. That is really the currency that they're looking for is our attention. And by choosing blue light specifically, they're able to get us addicted to these devices much easier. Well, what does that look like though when eventually we become dopamine depleted because the body is inundated by blue light all day long? Well, that causes things like addiction, not just tech addiction, but that addiction will bleed into other areas of your life as well, because you're dopamine depleted. And what do we need to make our own endogenous dopamine? We need ultraviolet A radiation from the sun entering our eyes. So UVA becomes available in the environment once the sun has risen about 10 degrees above the horizon. And most of us are completely blocking UVA because we're told to fear it, that it's terrible and UV radiation is going to kill us all, even though we're species that evolved under it with all these years and sunblock didn't exist before 80 years ago and all of these things. But when UVA enters our eyes, it stimulates the conversion of an amino acid called tyrosine into dopamine. So we're able to create dopamine. But because we live in these indoor existences, we're taught to fear the sun, especially UV radiation. We're not building our own endogenous supply. Meanwhile, we're being inundated with blue light that is driving dopamine depletion. And that's making it more difficult for us to focus, more difficult to have drive and motivation. So I've even found, you know, when I'm working during the day on the computer, I will wear yellow tinted blue light blocking glasses because they block about half the amount of blue. You still want to be alert and have energy for the day, so you don't want to block all of it at that time. But it really reduces eye strain, and it really has increased my ability to focus and work on the computer without just getting drained and exhausted so easily that the blue light is doing. So kind of to answer that question is, we know that they know what blue light does because it suits their marketing purposes to drive addiction to these devices to increase their profit margins. We know this. And you can kind of follow the breadcrumbs from there to how deep you want to go into it.
Yeah, excellent answer. That was fantastic. Wow. I mean, just the eye-opening aspect of what you're giving me, even if I don't even understand it, the importance of what I'm hearing and like just how we're surrounded with these types of lights and electronics. And like you said, it our body's connected to all of that and it's very disruptive to it. And my next question then would be, if in the morning and the evening, it's important times for that sun to, you know, for you to be exposed to those types of light, that's only going to happen for a short amount of time, I would assume. And, you know, is it important like to even get your windows open, like that kind of an idea, just to get exposed to these types of lights?
Yeah, I love the question. So, for example, you're in your car right now. So most people have to get up and get going to work. Maybe they don't have the ability to get a lot of this UVA exposure in the morning or sunrise exposure because they have to drive to work. But if you just roll down your window a bit and allow some of that full spectrum light to enter your eyes through the car, you're doing a lot of great work because it's packed with photons and photonic energy. Because the window glass is also filtering out about half the red and infrared, basically all of the UV. And what that means is the windows themselves of our cars and our homes are letting in a disproportionate amount of blue. So we don't even need to be on our devices to be inundated with blue light these days. We just have to be indoors. So this means, though, that by cracking a window and letting some of that full spectrum in, some of that infrared to balance things, it does have a huge effect. Right. So any little bits you can do, if you can take a 30-second sun break in the middle of the day to go outside, expose your eyes to the frequencies of light, to tell your body and your cells where they are in time, it's very, very helpful. And I would say that focusing on that morning and that end is the most important in the beginning. Like, work towards seeing sunrise if you can and getting that morning light exposure. And if that's difficult, just go outside first thing before you expose your eyes to artificial light. See the light of the natural sun first. And then start wearing glasses or whatever you need to do to block the artificial blue at sunset. And you'll start seeing these shifts in your body because your circadian clock will start shifting over time, step by step.
Wow. Great answer. Thank you, man.
So, Tim, hopefully you're, you know, I always say we try to keep these shows to an hour. I think that's going to change here because we have people like yourself that just have so much to give. And there's a lot of people on here that I think that this is connecting with. I think there's like 10 questions. So hopefully you can just stick with us as long as you possibly can. If you need to sign off, there's absolutely no worries at all. Brian, do you want to get into some questions, my friend?
Yeah, let's get to them.
Yeah, I'll get into them. First one is from Lap. How bad is it to eat a lot at night?
What's up, Lap?
So you typically do want to eat within a circadian window, which just means eat while the sun is out. If you think ancestrally, this would really be the only opportunity when we would be eating. And so that's important because you don't want to be stressing your system with having to digest food while you're sleeping. You want to allow your body to have finished digesting for it to enter this mode where it can start some of this apoptosis and autophagy and cellular repair at night. And it can't really do that if you're still digesting food. So how bad is it if you eat a lot at night? It depends on your situation. I can't really say that, but I can tell you how good it would be if you stopped doing that. And just try to eat within a circadian window. So maybe try to have your bigger dinner around sunset or at least 3 to 4 hours before bed to allow your body this regenerative capacity at night.
I just want to add, I've usually, unless I'm out at night or something with friends, I mean, it's, but you stop eating at around 8 p.m. And if you can go to next 8 a.m., right? The majority of that time you're asleep. So I think there's something to trying to teach your body how to do fasting for a little bit longer through sleep so that you can go, like, I haven't eaten anything today. I feel fantastic. I might fast all weekend. Usually when it's so busy, I don't eat. And back in the day, that would sound horrible. It's probably like horrible for your body. But the reality is that we've been stuffing our faces for so long. I'm speaking for myself. Peanut butter M&Ms and all this shit late night. Again, playing poker, eating out of vending machines in my 20s, that kind of stuff. That it catches up with you so fast that autophagy, just you stop eating for a little bit. And once the body realizes that, it doesn't go into hunger. It goes into this, basically itself cleans itself. And so if you're newer to this lab, I encourage you to check out autophagy, brother. It is a game changer. And it will change your life if you stick to it. For it took me about 90 days. All right, this one is.
I'm glad you brought up the fasting part, because people can get really overwhelmed with intermittent fasting on what's the right way to do it. I have to do things perfectly. But if you just follow the cycle of the sun, like we're talking about, and you stop eating basically when the sun goes down, like you're saying, then we are able to get that intermittent fasting. You're easily going to be fasting and you're going to be asleep the whole time. So you're not even going to have to struggle. So it's a great way to get those benefits as well.
And work up.
And
to
if
that
you're
stuff.
Eating at night, yeah. If you're eating at night too, that means you're also probably exposed to artificial blue light. And I'm going to add another reason it's so bad for you, because artificial blue light, independent of what you eat, increases blood sugar levels. So this means that if you're eating food in front of the TV that's a blue lit screen, you're really spiking your insulin, which is going to cause a crash afterwards. This is also a big reason why shift workers who have very disrupted circadian rhythms and are inundated by fluorescence with high amounts of blue all day and all night, they have such high rates of type 2 diabetes. And so people can be really struggling with their weight, their blood sugar management, and feel like I'm focusing on diet, nothing's working. Well, they're not looking at the light. And light is fundamental. This is the biophysics. Biophysics drives biochemistry. So the diet can start helping you out once you fix your light environment. But if you don't fix your light environment, it's going to be kind of working against the grain. Very difficult to just fix things with diet alone. Because again, blue light, independent of what you eat, increases your blood glucose.
Amazing.
All right, next question from Kid Mac. Obviously, everybody knows Kid Mac. How well do grounding mats work?
It depends on the context. So they typically work. I've bought some and tested them with a grounding meter, and all the ones that I've got some grounded bed sheets. They've all worked well. What's important is when you purchase these, it needs to be from like a reputable company. I just wouldn't buy from something cheap from China or maybe even Amazon. I just wouldn't trust the quality of that. And they need to deliver a grounding tester for you that you plug into your outlet that just makes sure that that grounding port, that the electricity is properly grounded. You certainly don't want to plug anything into that grounding port if it's not actually grounded well. So you need to test it first, the outlet. And then it's good because, right, you're reducing the positive charge that's built up in your body by connecting you to the earth, allowing that electron transfer. So great for things like inflammation. But I would also add the caveat that you want to make sure that you are reducing the non-native EMF in that environment. So if I have grounded bed sheets, I don't want to be sitting with using my phone or computer with it plugged in while I'm sitting on the grounded bed sheets. Well, why? Because I've just made my body a conduit for all this electrical activity to flow through, which could be stressing to the body. So it's important to reduce the non-native EMF in the environment when you add something like this, the grounding. And I would always prioritize the free option, right? Go outside, do your gardening, connect with the earth, go for a swim. But grounding mats and grounding sheets are definitely helpful tools that are available for us as well. But just make sure it's a good quality.
Is it better to be barefoot when you're out in your garden, or can wearing shoes or boots, does that matter? Does your actual foot touching the ground increase something significant?
So most people's shoes or boots have rubber soles, and rubber is an insulator. So it's preventing the flow of electrons from the earth into your body. And so that's where the problem begins. So that's where I would say barefoot's the best protocol, but things like leather or cotton, these are all conductive materials that would allow electron flow. There are companies that sell grounded shoes. There is even a company that sells these little straps that you can buy and to stick into your shoes that will make any shoe a grounded shoe. I've tried those out and those work. So there are options out there for you if, let's say, winter's coming or you need foot protection. There are some options out there.
Thank you.
All right. This one's from David. How does drinking RO water affect hydration?
I'm assuming this is reverse osmosis water.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Reverse osmosis. Correct.
Okay. Well, first, I would say, number one, it's great because you're doing the first step, which is filtering this water, which for most people who are relied on, unless you have an artesian well, you're probably relying on municipal water that's going to have things like fluoride in it. So filtering that water is really critical for all the reasons we talked about earlier. And reverse osmosis is pretty effective at doing this. However, there's a step two that you need to start incorporating with this reverse osmosis water. And that is, yes, you're filtering out all the bad, but by doing this, you're also filtering out all the beneficial minerals. And so then if you're only drinking this water, it's basically stripped of all of the life. It's dead water with no mineral content in it. And when we drink this water, it just really flushes through the body, which can have a detoxifying benefit. It'll like flush through our kidneys. It'll cause people to have to urinate more often because it's just moving through them. We need that mineral content for the water to actually be uptaken into our cells to actually hydrate us. So if you can start remineralizing that reverse osmosis water, that's a great step. You can buy some sea salt mineral drops that are out there. You can also create something called a Soleil solution, which is basically just dissolving a bunch of, let's say, Celtic sea salt or Himalayan salt in water until it can't be, any more salt can be dissolved. Let's say you make a big pitcher of that. And then you pour like an inch of that into a glass, a full glass of water. So you're adding some of this salt in the morning, this mineral content, and you chug one of those glasses in the morning. So wow. The filtering is critical, but you want to bring it back alive.
So you would just let it, a chunk of Himalayan sea salt, sit in a large container of water. And is there a way that you can tell without just testing it, like a person at home testing like this water, like buoyancy or something, with how much salt it's actually got and when it's ready to use?
So essentially you want to get it to where it becomes like a full isotonic solution that matches the blood plasma levels. All you really need to do is add enough to where no more seems to be dissolving. So if you get to this point where there's now like a thin layer of salt or something that's just staying there, it's like at full capacity. And at then that point, you can take a few drops or as much as like an inch in the bottom of a glass. You really just go to taste. Your body's going to tell you how much of these minerals you need. And if you get excess sodium in this way, you're just going to pee it out. Or the worst symptom you could experience is diarrhea. Just like if you're taking magnesium and you hit that critical limit, you know, okay, well, I've reached that limit. Let me just taper off a bit. I've personally found this strategy to be a game changer for my hydration. I've always been somebody who just forgot about drinking water, couldn't ever drink water, didn't enjoy it, very unpleasant. But when I started making, it's called a Soleil mixture, S-O-L-E, and mixing that with my water, it makes the water to me feel very smooth and I can really drink it down and it feels incredibly hydrating. And I like crave it now and was before. Now, if I drink water straight out of the tap, it feels very sharp and harsh. And I've explained this, I've shared my experience with people and they've had the same experience. My theory on that is because of the mineral content, well, those minerals are hydrophilic surfaces. So what will the water start doing? It'll start creating exclusion zone water shell around each mineral. And that exclusion zone water is a gel-like consistency. So that might be why I'm kind of experiencing the feeling of smoother water when you do this.
What would you say is the best? So for like, I guess, somebody who doesn't have money for an expensive filtration system is like, I honestly don't even know if a carbon filter gets rid of fluoride, but like, what is the best at-home filtration? Is it RO? Like, is that how you roll? Is what you're saying? You go RO and then add your Soleil drops?
Well, I'm very fortunate here that we've got an artesian well, so I don't have to worry about the filtering aspect. I just sometimes add in some of these minerals.
Right. Yeah. But someone on like a municipal source who doesn't necessarily have a feasible option. Because if there was like I could drive down the road and hit an artesian well. Like in the old days, what I used to get over in New York. That's easy answer right there. But you know, someone who doesn't have it, who doesn't have that, like, I just think about the person on the 35th floor in in Manhattan, right, listening to this, who's got a passion for and looking for an answer, you know. What would you say for somebody like that?
I would say first, let's mitigate some of the stress and fear around it, where any filtering you're able to do is going to be good, right? So yes, maybe just a regular carbon filter can't get the fluoride, but it will be able to get some of that stuff out of there. So that's good. Reverse osmosis is great from my understanding. So if that's what you've got, keep using it. Then there are other systems out there. I don't know a lot about all the options or the price points. I do know that there's something called a Spring Aqua, I believe, which not only filters the water and should filter the fluoride as well, but it helps structure the water to make it more biologically coherent. And it also adds molecular hydrogen into it, which is a powerful antioxidant. So with the water, there's a lot of options out there, but just do your research, any filtering mechanism you can get. I have purchased for a friend of mine a handheld filter. That's all that they were able to have, which it was called Clearly, I believe. And they claim to be able to filter out the fluoride, which most of these hand ones can't, or these fridge ones. I can't independently verify that it is getting out the fluoride, but I purchased it for them just as a measure of safety.
I personally buy water from Costco or through Costco. I would say that it's there's definitely a benefit to it.
What kind, Brian? Distilled, spring?
No. Our family only drinks spring water, and I think that's more where Tim's getting at. So if you are, like, you got your grow, you got your RO water sitting over there, and you think you're doing yourself a benefit by drinking that constantly. I even talked about this with Joshua Steensland like 6-7 years ago when we were talking in Indo Expo, that the RO really is lifeless. It's lifeless to the plants unless you're growing in that way, and I think there's something to it's lifeless to the human body. So in my personal opinion, if you have a little extra money, get some, like, it's like Deep Water Rock, or it's going to be different from probably Costco to Costco where it is around the country. But they work with companies that are using water that is basically as clean as you can get. And then if you really want to feel better, and it is a little bit expensive, but drink Fiji water or Evian water for a week straight. Spend a little extra money on it and start to see how you feel. And I think where Tim is saying that, where the water actually tastes a little bit silky, I've noticed that with the high-end waters. So there is something to that. I've been made fun of my whole, adult life paying for water. But I do think that there's really something to that.
100% agree. And, you know, there's all these studies now that providing that type of water to your plants has a huge benefit on their growth and production as well, rather than, it, like you said, it's lifeless water that most people are drinking. The other thing I would add on this, depending on how much people have an interest in water, is something called deuterium. Now, water from low elevation, low latitudes, are going to have a higher concentration of deuterium in it. And deuterium is an isotope or a variant of hydrogen. So hydrogen is a really small atom, very simple. It just has a proton in its nucleus with an electron orbiting it. Deuterium is a version of this that also has a neutron in the nucleus, which basically means it's a version of hydrogen that is twice as big and twice as heavy. This deuterium clogs up our electron transport chain in the mitochondria. Because if you remember, I talked about how electrons are funneled through here and then protons get pumped through this ATPase nanometer to create ATP. Well, that pump is only designed to be able to fit protium or regular hydrogen. And deuterium is so big, it gunks up the nanomotor and then it interrupts your mitochondria's ability to produce cellular energy and has to be repaired. So the body, we typically want to have in parts per million, less than 130 parts per million of deuterium. Deuterium's everywhere, so it's not like we can just avoid it altogether, nor would you want to, because it does have biological purpose as well. But most people, deuterium is highly concentrated in processed foods and industrial seed oils. So we're getting this huge amounts of deuterium, which are inhibiting our mitochondria from metabolizing food and producing energy. So it's making us overweight, speeding up aging, disrupting metabolism. And how it connects back to the water is that spring water, like Brian's talking about, is a great option. Even better is spring water from high altitudes or glacial meltwater. The reason is that it contains less deuterium. So it's going to deplete the deuterium levels inside your body, helping your mitochondria work more efficiently. And the reason why there's less deuterium at high elevations is because deuterium is heavy, right? So if it's concentrating in a cloud, the first water to start falling is going to be the deuterium-laden water.
Absolutely, man.
Wow.
So we got another question here from Mark Nelson. I would imagine he's talking about the Wi-Fi, kind of like there's bracelets. I've seen like necklaces and stuff. There's even little, like, it looks like a digital rock or something that people put that supposedly protects them, or at least in Boulder, they're used to that. I don't know if you've ever been to Boulder, but they're really into rocks, man. And then some of that stuff makes a lot of sense to me. And then other times, you know, I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to smoke and maybe talk about it. But do you see any of that kind of stuff with the rocks or the crystals or the copper bracelets? Does any of that kind of stuff, the Wi-Fi stuff, does any of that work in your opinion?
I am very skeptical of anything that claims to harmonize or neutralize EMFs. The reason for this is because if you take an EMF reader or a radio frequency reader and measure the amount of non-native EMF, even when you're using these things, there's absolutely zero effect. So it's not blocking the EMF in any way. And that's really critical to note, because there are ways that you can block EMF, right? But that's not to say that it's all BS. Because most of these companies or bracelets or things of this nature, most of them aren't claiming to actually block the frequencies. Most of them are claiming that they neutralize them or harmonize them in some way that makes that more biologically compatible for us. So I think that we just don't have enough evidence to say one way or another yet. So in this way, I would say, if you're using something like this and you feel like it makes you feel protected and you have a positive experience with it, go with whatever you're resonating with. Like, trust your intuition on something like that. I don't think we have enough scientific evidence to say exactly how some of these things are working, or maybe there is, and it's just not distributed widely enough. I think that the most important thing that I want people to get is, do not put a sticker on your phone and think that that protects you from all of the phone addiction that you have. I don't want people to start using these types of things as a crutch, because we need to address the problem at the root source. We need to have responsible exposure to our technology, responsible relationship with it, increase downtime, increase distance from it, decrease duration from it. So I think that's what I want people to focus on the most. And then if you have something like a tourmaline or a crystal or something that is resonating with you that you feel like is also beneficial, maybe you use an indigo gabbro stone and you put it on your Wi-Fi router. Sure, by all means, maybe it is refracting the waves in some way that is making it more biologically compatible. I can just tell you that it's not blocking the EMF.
You just pissed off Boulder, but I agree.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not saying no.
All right. Ming Lin, have you heard of Dr. Jack Krause? I've heard him say the more we are in the sun, the more melanin we have, which can actually absorb and store these chemicals. I think you kind of mentioned him.
Yeah, I was going to say him earlier.
Yeah, answering my question.
I did. I had a phone call with Dr. Jack Cruz earlier last week. We were talking about Lyme disease, and I asked him, I said, I need to understand everything about it. Give me as much homework as I can handle.
So Google it, right?
Melanin.
Yeah.
Melanin is an incredible molecule. That has been shown, to Ming's question, to have the ability to sequester and chelate heavy metals. So melanin, if you build up melanin, which you need ultraviolet radiation on the skin to stimulate production of melanin to have a healthy tan, well, that tan is protective, not just from the ultraviolet radiation, because melanin is a transducer of electromagnetic energy, which means it will absorb the ultraviolet high energy radiation and convert it into biologically compatible, safe infrared heat. So, and it does this with 99.9% efficacy. So the best sunscreen we can develop is our own melanin sheaths. And we know the sun protecting capability of melanin, but what's less known is this heavy metal chelation. So melanin is also an antioxidant, and it is able to sequester heavy metals. So it will help pull heavy metals out of the bloodstream where they can be potentially damaging, traveling to vital organs, things of that nature. And it will sequester it in our skin cells. Those skin cells are then readily shed and then new cells are grown. So this is a great protection for us. So the more traditional dermatologists these days will tell us that any tan is bad. And this is just completely myopic. This is completely untrue when we start understanding all of the biological reasons that we develop melanin in the first place, and all of the things that it provides for us. Protection from UV rays. Why do we need that UV? Well, we can only synthesize vitamin D, for example, from exposure to UVB. So if we put on sunscreen that blocks UVB, we're not synthesizing vitamin D. We're decreasing our immune capabilities and our ability to produce melanin, which means we're more susceptible to sunburn. So it's really important to build a healthy protective tan over time. There is a strategic and responsible way of doing this, though, to protect you from excess amounts of oxidative stress on the skin. But yes, great question about melanin.
All right. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get it to all these questions, to be honest. I think I'm going to be kicked out here soon. I know Kevin's got to leave. But I would love to have you on again if we can.
Yeah, and sure, I can pick up, too, if you guys get kicked out.
Okay, so real quick, shout out to Rick Easley. That dude is a G. Do Orgon generators really work to clean, stabilize EMF and Wi-Fi?
This one I don't know about. I just don't have any information.
Fair enough. I'd rather you say
fair
that.
Enough. Yeah. That's the thing. If I don't know something about something, I'll let you know.
This is from a Juggalo. What does H3O do for your body?
H3O. So I'm not sure what this is in reference to. I would tell you that when I talked about the exclusion zone water and how it changes its molecular structure, that goes from H2O. And when it's in this lattice, it becomes H3O2. And so that's in this structured form. But I'm not sure how to answer the question, what does H3O do for our body or in what context that is?
Yeah, fair enough. Juggalo, if you're still watching, buddy, you can clarify. We'll get it on there. This one from Mark Nelson again. What are your thoughts on placing organic hay over spots for the winter? I'm not really sure.
I think this is probably more of a toss-up to the whole squad here. And placing anything organic matter, do that. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, Mark. Build up. Right now is the time to build. It's fall, so think about fall, all the leaves in your yard, all that stuff. Get it built up on your spots for sure.
Hey, I got to drop out of here. Let me shout out real quick. Timothy, thank you for being here. You are fantastic. I'm going to have to go back and watch this show again. You answered a ton of questions I have constantly thought about. So thank you. Please come back. We have a lot more to talk about. Go to okcalicshop.com, guys. Check that out. Mark, thank you. Brian, thank you. Y'all have a good week. I appreciate you guys very much. I'll see y'all.
Love you, buddy.
Take care, Mark.
Yeah, love you, Kevin. All right. Let's get into these next ones here. Also, if you guys see behind me here, shout out to CKP Reptiles. That's my homie Chase. He and his lovely lady are behind me right here. The whole reason I'm even being able to do this is because the damn Wi-Fi that you've been talking about is right over his booth. So I've been having to sit here even though my booth's way over there. So shout out to them. If you guys are into reptiles, this is the homie that's on his way, man. He's 26 years old, and this kid is smart.
He came on the show.
He
was on like episode 15 talking about crested geckos. We love to draw a correlation between... So I think health is at the paramount of everything we're talking about. And it always like it, the drawback, what we always try to draw it back to is the soil. And so there's a parallel between, you know, having a reptile enclosure, a vivarium, an insect enclosure indoors, trying to replicate nature, having living soil indoors, trying to replicate nature, for, you know, or growing cannabis or whatever it is you're doing indoors. And then it all correlates to what we're always trying to replicate, which is nature, and understanding that. And then the point of doing all these things indoors and trying to replicate nature is that we're getting the best health out of the thing, of what it is that we're growing, whether it be reptiles, you get more vibrant colors, you get healthier, happier beings with more purpose in life, and it less smells and just more positives, so many less less negatives. And then, you know, the living soil cannabis thing, we beat that dead horse. So just having healthier plants is the goal there. So, yeah. So anyways, we love to draw that correlation, Tim, and then being able to fulfill that last little nugget, which is trying to understand these things on a deeper level, and having you on here is so amazing. So end of rant. Let's get back into questions, Brian, until you get kicked off.
Yeah, this one's from Hungry Plant. If you stay in the dark extra long, the melatonin feels so good. It's healing, I think. I was just, it's kind of a comment more than a question, but I would echo that. I think if you are stuck indoors, you're an e-commerce builder, you're trying to make a lot of money for yourself, the days and the weeks and the months go by, right? And so myself included, I don't go outside as much as I should. And listening to Tim speak today, I will assure you that it's on another level of what he's talking about. And it's taken me, I'm 42, so it's taken me a while to start to figure this out. Anything to add to that?
That ties to some of the benefits of winter, right? So we're heading into the winter season. There's less light. It's colder. And so we tend to have some resistance to this because it's more comfortable for us to create perpetual states of summer. But if we actually lean into what the season is offering, like Hungry Plant is saying, there's extra dark for longer. That means increased melatonin. Melatonin is a critical antioxidant. So it is healing, quite literally. So we can take advantage of what it has. We have increased opportunities for cold thermogenesis, which is very beneficial for the body. Lots of things. So I think I would just say the more you kind of live in tune with each season rather than resist it or take yourself out of it from artificial connection, that's when you start experiencing more illness because your body is not able to go through these full cycles that it's expecting because we evolved on this planet that not only has regular cycles of day and night, but regular seasonal changes. So we talk about our 24-hour circadian rhythms, but we also have annual infradian rhythms. And so it's kind of a bummer if you cut yourself off from the benefits of it.
Well said. How beneficial this is from Stone Mason, another person. We have a lot of faithful watchers here, and you know, it takes a long time to build a channel. So I just appreciate everybody that's a dirt dork that's hanging out even tonight to learn about health, basically health dorks tonight. But how beneficial is moonlight, especially kind of going outside for walks late at night, that kind of stuff? What are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't know how beneficial. I'm sure there is beneficial aspects to moonlight, which is obviously just reflected light of the sun. However, I can tell you for people who have sensitivity to light in some way, the excess amount of blue light during the full moon can be quite disruptive and damaging to their circadian biology and can cause an increase in mental health symptoms, anxiety, insomnia. So it's kind of the first blue light example that we have of disruption. And I believe that this is where the term lunatic came from. You know, full moon, bright, a lot of craziness in the environment. I think that this came from some of this disruption that it can cause for people who are sensitive to it. So how beneficial it is, I don't know. I'm sure that there's some aspects there, but there is some interesting implications in terms of the negative effects that it can have. But I would say, but just a caveat that what matters besides the wavelength or color of light, which obviously we want to limit blue at night, is also the intensity or the lux of it. And so even the full moon reflecting a lot of light at night, which will include blue, the lux is going to be so low. It might measure at like one. There's going to be very few photons in any given area from that. Whereas you go inside, you turn on one LED light bulb, the lux of that one light bulb is going to be about 50. So that indoor light source is going to be about 50 times brighter. And so that I would just add that in as well.
All right. I will say, I mean, at night, it does feel good sometimes to be under the moon, especially if you can be on the beach under the moon. There might be just something
sure
about that. From Jorge, is it bad if I sleep with my TV on? I almost need to run over there and grab my wife. We argue about that almost every night.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately, because even though your eyes are closed, so maybe you're blocking your photoreceptors from being able to detect that blue light. Remember, that blue light is a daytime signal that is telling your brain it's the middle of the day, so I'm going to stimulate the pituitary gland to increase cortisol, increase blood pressure, blood sugar, and suppress melatonin. So by sleeping with the TV on, you're inhibiting your own melatonin production. And like I'm saying, even if your eyes were completely closed, we learned that you not only have melanopsin, which is the blue light detector, in your eyes, you also have it all over your skin. So we first discovered melanopsin in amphibians, but then just within the last two decades, I believe it's a fairly recent scientific discovery that we have these non-visual photoreceptors in our skin all over our body. So even by protecting my eyes here from artificial blue light from my screen, that's the most important thing to focus on because of the concentration of blue light detectors in the retina. But at the same time, if I were shirtless, for example, I'd be exposing a lot of that blue light onto my skin. My body's still detecting the presence of blue light. So that's signaling it's daytime. I need to drive up blood sugar. I need to drive up cortisol, stress hormones, really inhibiting your sleep, maybe even contributing to weight and blood sugar management issues, and also dopamine depletion, like we talked about, like addiction or difficulty focusing. So try to start avoiding having that TV on. If it's something that you feel you're really dependent on or just can't get away from, I always like to coach people to do baby steps. So there's a company out there. I think they're called Waken, W-A-K-N or something like that, where they will sell these sheets that you can apply over the TV, like this film, that will block and filter out some of the blue. So use these things as a way to like step yourself into a healthier rhythm and routines.
Right on. I can't really yell at her though, because we have a 5-month-old. So she wins no matter what's going on.
There you go.
All right, Ming Lin, what type of light should I buy for around the house? And I think so many people are just buying these bright LEDs and they're underneath them all day long.
Yes, I love this question. So our government has phased out incandescent light bulbs, right? And so mostly what we have now are LEDs, light emitting diodes. This reason for this that we're told is that the LEDs are much more energy efficient. Well, why is this? It's because they're not giving off heat. The incandescent light bulbs are a thermal source of lighting, meaning they're giving off heat. That heat is considered energy inefficiency because we're not using it. So it's just wasting energy, wasting money. Let's switch to the LEDs to save money and to save energy. But unfortunately, what we're not recognizing is that incandescent light bulb, that thermal source of radiation, which the sun is thermal radiation, that's what we're evolved and adapted to, that contains a more full spectrum of light that includes infrared. So it's this non-visible form of light that is very critical for us. As we talked about in this talk earlier, infrared light is able to penetrate deeply into the body that other wavelengths can't, where it expands the exclusion zone water, which is our internal battery, where it stimulates the activity of cytochrome C oxidase in the mitochondria to produce more water and energy. So infrared is incredibly healing and restorative to the body, and our incandescent lights are emitting that. But we can't just see it. We experience it as heat. So we're focusing on energy efficiency. And by doing that, we're depleting our biological energy efficiency. There's a health consequence to this, shift. So what type of lights can you buy for around the house? Start slowly changing out your LEDs. Most LEDs, because they're so bright and clear, that's because they have a very large spike in blue and they contain absolutely zero infrared. In nature, there is never blue light available without the balancing presence of red and infrared. Because blue light is so stimulating, because it causes so much oxidative stress, it has to be balanced by the red. And when we've isolated specific wavelengths of radiation, all light is a form of radiation, that has a biological consequence. So what you can do is you could switch to incandescents. There still are some available on Amazon. There's a company, I can't think of the name of it right now, but they are Edison style light bulbs, the decorative Edison style light bulbs you can buy that are incandescents. They're also just a little bit more warm, a little more soothing. If you switch to incandescents, they're also going to have less flicker. Since you're plugged into an AC grid, there still will be some flicker, but the LEDs really have a ton of flicker and fluorescents have even more. And that's very stressful to the body because it's activating the sympathetic nervous system, because that flicker, even though you can't see it with your naked eye, but if you take your phone and you take a slow motion video and record that light and play it back, you're going to see this crazy flicker. It's causing your iris to expand and contract rapidly, which is very straining and stressful for the body. So switch to those incandescents. And then if you really want to get into the circadian rhythm out of it all, you can choose something like what I've got on here, which is a pure red LED. So yes, it's still LED, but it's purely red with absolutely zero green, zero blue. This is what I have late at night if I have to use some light. And there's some other companies out there that sell circadian friendly lighting options that have mitigated this amount of blue. If you go to my website, regenerant.com/store, I have vetted some companies that I've listed there that sell some of these options. You could check some of those things out.
And I thank you. That was the last question for tonight. And I do think a lot more people are going to start to research this, myself included, with being up late at night. To be honest, smoking a little weed in the early days, eating candy, having my shirt off, all of this stuff makes a lot of sense of just the months and the years that build up on that of why you start to have health problems, gut problems, arthritis, all this kind of stuff, because you're not taking care of your health. And I do, in my opinion, I really, especially now, kind of monetary things are great, but the real wealth in life is health. And I want to be able to live a healthy lifestyle, and I know our audience does as well. And I know Mark and Kevin, all these guys, you know, they're able to be outside a lot more, it seems like, gardening and stuff. So just shout out to everybody that's involved in the community. I think this was one for the books. I'm definitely going to watch this one again.
It's really important to understand why, like, I get these gut feelings. You know, Brian, you talked about your wrists hurting using Bluetooth mice, right? And then to hear Timothy kind of corroborate that is something that he's experienced as well. That's something that I've also experienced. But you get these kind of these intuition, your body throws you, and without having the deepest of understanding and even like the ability to comprehend where to start understanding this stuff, hearing it really makes it all click together for me. And I think that this information being shared like this is really important for not only the community understanding why the people here listening probably are, hopefully people are starting to understand why gardening makes you feel better. You're getting grounded. It's not necessarily just like the microbes entering through your skin or whatever, like the woo-woo. Truly it is like you're grounding yourself metaphorically and physically. To have this, to have you as a resource and on the show, and hopefully we can have you come back and do a follow-up and get all the questions answered that people didn't get in. And that I'm going to be thinking about this until we have you back on again. truly a gift, Tim. And regenerant.com, how else can we find you? And what services do you provide?
So I provide one-off consultations if you have questions about something or dealing with some issue. I also have free discovery calls, so 30 minutes, and we can determine if you require some extra assistance from there. I also have coaching programs, which have flexible structures. If you want to go to my website, I have a page that's free resources. Right now, I just created a circadian optimization guide. It's almost 20 pages of information on your circadian biology, explaining what it is, how it works, and what you can actually do. So in this guide, there's enough information if you want to dive into the science, you can do that. But if you're somebody who's like, just tell me what to do, that's in there for you too. And so there's a checklist and everything. So check out that free resource you can download from my website, regenerant.com. If you want to get in touch with me for health coaching or consultations, you can book directly through a Calendly link that's there. I'm also available on Instagram at Regenerant and across all social media channels, essentially at Regenerant. That's R-E-G-E-N-E-R-I-N-T, which stands for Regenerative Intelligence. And gentlemen, yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I love Q&A. I love talking about this stuff. I just find it so amazing myself. Like the more I dig in, the more I learn, the more I'm just fascinated by our biology and the world around us and how it all works. And it's been so impactful and life-changing for me, really digging me out from being completely medically disabled. So when I get the opportunity to share it, I'm just very grateful for that. So thank you so much for having me on.
Tim, I think it speaks to you as a person and to your integrity as a company and everything else. And it's also amazingly ironic that you used to be working in political disinformation, where a lot of people would hear this information and say, this is witchcraft. This is ridiculous disinformation. So if you're looking for a credibility check or like a resume, just remember the fact that Tim came from a background of doing just that, checking
sifting where out this
yes. And I appreciate so much how you answer the questions. That A, if you don't know the answer, you just say it, and B, if you can speak on it, you speak on the facts. And I think that that's really important. That's why I love having people like Matt Powers on. That's why I love having people like Tim on, where you can call it witchcraft. You can call it woo woo. You can call it whatever you want, but what Tim speaks on, comes from personal experience, but it also comes from like a deep dive of real information. And what you've heard is a distillation of that information down to something that we can really understand. So my hat's off to you, and I really appreciate it. And where you can find us, mibeneficials.com. I will be getting a new microphone probably tonight, before, as I said before, I'll be up till midnight tonight because of all the blue light. I'm going to be ordering the blockers. I'm going to be looking at your website to get a little more information at regenerant.com. But I think that would really help me a lot. Yeah. Appreciate everybody's support for the show. MIBeneficials.com. Don't forget to support the boy Kevin at OKCalix, regenerant.com. And Brian, you're sitting in Wyoming right now at a show that's trying to shut you out right now to go back to the hotel. So
that's
let's get your sign off, the finale sign off here, buddy.
That's right. I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming tonight at Mr. Critters Reptile Expo. Again, thanks to CKP Reptiles, the homie Chase. He's right here. Mr. Critters is even right here. So putting everything together tonight, we have to do things on a Friday night to get ready for these shows. These are kind of bigger shows. And this is how we make a living. So I'm just excited to be a part of this, to learn more about health from Tim tonight, to go home and get off of a lot of the stuff when I get back to my house and maybe rethink about how I'm going to be able to play poker in a way that it's all about profitability. And I think any little edge that I can get is huge. And that's why you piqued my interest with even some of the simpler things. I have even a cyst. I don't know if you guys can see that, but I have a cyst right here on my wrist from playing online poker for all these years. So I really do think that there's something to what Tim is saying. And growing up in Georgia, most of my family would have made fun of a lot of this stuff. And I've moved out to Colorado a long time ago, and I'm starting to believe in a lot of the stuff that Mark was kind of calling woo-woo. Some of it's out there, man, like I was saying in Boulder. But a lot of the metaphysical, a lot of the autophagy, all of the things that sound kind of silly at the beginning, I'm living, in real time, I guess, trying to heal and take care of the family and giving kefir to my children so their microbiome is built up. And I've noticed it in their eyes and their skin and all of this kind of stuff. So there's a lot to this. And I just, again, want to thank Tim. Want to thank everybody that's supporting Rubber Ducky Isopod so that we could do these free things on Friday nights. And I also want to thank Mark. I'm showing up to a lot of these Isopod events. And I have his product line. So if you guys are wanting to support the show and wanting to support us when you see me at an expo, not only buy a little isopod for me, but get yourself a fungus gnat eradicator or some colored springtails, because all of that's coming from Mark. I'm just, helping to build up the brands of everybody that's involved. So I need to run. They're all looking at me like, get the fuck out of here. But I appreciate you, Tim. And like I said, man, this is something that is very special and near and dear to my heart. I have 4 children now, and all I want to do is take care of them from the inside out and protect them from the bullshit that, you see when you get older. So thank you, guys. I got to run. Mark, like I tell you, man, I love you like a brother, dude. And this was something that I think more people need to realize, is that health is real wealth, man. And nobody gives a shit if you got a bunch of money in the bank and you can't even get up out of bed. See you guys next week.
Love you, bud. All right, Tim. Until next time, I'll be in touch, and hope everybody takes this stuff to the bank and applies it to their lives, because it doesn't cost you much.
Exactly.
Until next week, guys, stay regenerative, get connected with that sun outside, stay healthy. Love you all. Good night.